UK Wine Show, show number 114. Sam Lindo from Camel Valley. On this week's show, we're talking with Sam Lindo, winemaker at English Winery Camel Valley, down in Cornwall. And in the news this week, the UK government supports South African carbon study, St. Emilion classification back in business, and the Italian government guarantees Brunello. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 114 for the 18th of July 2008. My name is Chris Scott, and on this week's show, we're talking with Sam Lindo. Sam is the winemaker at Cornwall's top winery, Camel Valley. Sam was also English Winemaker of the Year 2007. We talk with Sam about growing grapes in Cornwall and why he likes Sauvignon Blanc for his sparklers. As I'm still in bright and breezy Australia at the moment, we still sadly don't have Jane to read the news. So here's the news with me. A week after the St. Emilion classification was declared invalid, it's back. The yo-yoing classification has been reinstated after France's wine classification body, the INAO, asked the government to allow the previous 1996 classification to stand. This means that wines that were Premier Cru Class A or Grand Cru Class A in that classification can use these rankings for their 2006 through to 2009 harvest. This is good news for the 11 chateaus who were demoted in the 2006 classification, but leaves those that were promoted without their new ranking. Next up, the UK government supports South African carbon study. The UK government is to help fund research into carbon footprint of the South African wine and fruit industry. Trade and Development Minister Gareth Thomas challenged the idea that export products from the developing world would have a bigger environmental cost and said, "Food miles created are only one part of the equation. This study will look at the whole cycle of production, which is the only fair way to go." He added, "His research has shown that nearly three quarters of the UK public want to use their weekly shop to reduce poverty in the developing world. But they don't want to spend over the odds, especially with the global economic situation, and they're quite rightly concerned about climate change," according to Gareth. And finally in the news, the Italian government guarantees Brunello. The saga has been going on for a while, but recently, the Italian government is to guarantee that all exported Brunello is 100% Sangiovese. Agriculture Minister Luca Zaia announced the move to ensure that the continued export of wine to the US. America had threatened to block imports after it was suggested that Brunellos contained grapes other than Sangiovese. As the biggest foreign market for the wine, taking about a quarter of the 7 million bottles of Brunello di Montalcino produced each year, such a ban would have proved very costly to the Italians. Luca announced that a certification process, which entailed inspections to make sure no grape varieties other than Sangiovese had been added to the wines. That ends the news this week. For the stories in full, you can get them from our website, 3050.co.uk. This is a fairly short podcast this week, so I'm not going to be running a spotlight for a number of reasons, mainly because I got my dates wrong and I want to include the poll results in the next part of looking at wine and health. So we're going to skip spotlight this week, but do remember to have your say in our poll. It's our last week for that. And the question this week is, how many units of alcohol can a man and woman drink each week to stay within the UK's sensible drinking guidelines? Go to our website, 3050.co.uk, and have your say. Next up, we have the interview with Sam Lindo. Now, when I recorded this about 2 to 3 months ago, Sam was the reigning English winemaker of the year. Since then, Sam has had to relinquish the crown to Martin Folkes of Three Choirs. So at the beginning, we talk about the winemaker of the year. But let's not hold that against Sam. Let's have a listen to what Sam has to say. Hi, I'm here with Sam Lindo. You're the winemaker at Camel Valley. How are you, Sam?
Very good, very good, very good.
Excellent. We're going to be talking a wee bit about Camel Valley today and winemaking down in Cornwall.
Uh-huh.
But I understand you're the English winemaker of the year.
Yeah. 2007 UK winemaker of the year. And what that means is that it's done on the three best scores of your three best wines in the United Kingdom Vineyards Association competition. And we came out top.
Fantastic. Normally, I understand Owen Elias has won that quite a bit from English wine producers or
Yeah. He's won it a few times. I think they've got a few more wines to enter, so we really feel like we pulled off a bit of a coup.
Yeah, excellent. Well, it's good to see that you're doing well. You're down in Cornwall. Do you want to tell us, where are you in Cornwall?
We're basically a mile from the direct centre of Cornwall. So we're about the warmest place you can be in Cornwall, but without because we're further away from the sea. We're the right side of Bodmin Moor, not to get too much rain.
Okay, and Cornwall, just for people who know, is sort of south-west side. We're
very south-west of England, so the very bottom left foot part of England.
Okay, and there's what they call Land's End is not too far away.
Yeah, Land's End is probably about an hour's drive from where we are. Right. So we're near Bodmin.
Okay. Bodmin Moor?
Bodmin Moor, yeah, if that's what people know.
Okay. And what's the soils like down there? Is it...
Medium loam over shillet. So what's required for vines, really, for good growth is good drainage.
Yeah, particularly in England.
And then after that, soils might have an effect. But we do have other growers from other parts of England as well. But no one on chalk soil, so all of our grapes come off a medium loam.
Oh, that's surprising, isn't it?
It is. We're sort of wondering whether that does have an effect on acidity. It makes it acid a bit more juicy rather than the harder taste. But we'll see.
Makes your acidity more juicy.
Yeah, I think our acidity always comes out juicy. So, you know, it makes your mouth water rather than being quite a hard taste that's harder to drink. So even though we have a slightly higher acidity being in England, it's still very
rounded.
Juicy. Yeah, rounded, yeah.
Okay, interesting. What are the big wines for you guys? Because I know you do some sparklers, you've got some Bacchus, you do a bit of everything, really, don't you?
We do a bit of everything. I always think that our still wines benefit from the fact that we make sparkling. So with our normal white sparkling, the Cornwall Brut, we make a press cut of all the grapes that go into that. And the pressings that come out of the at the end of the pressing are much lower in acidity and have more flavour. And by not putting that into the sparkling, it improves the sparkling. But unlike champagne, we can use that to go into our still wines, and it actually improves the still wine. So we think that we need to make both in order to make good wine.
Okay, so the first bit, which is the free-run juice, really, isn't it?
Yeah, we crush our grapes for sparkling, which is a bit different. I think we have less phenolics in England, so we can afford to crush, which makes pressing a bit easier. So I reckon the first, you know, two-thirds, three-quarters of the juice that comes out of the press will be for sparkling. And then there's a sudden change in the pH level of the juice that's coming out, and then that's when we'll put it into a different tank, and that will go towards the still wine in our Atlantic Dry.
Okay. And what's your most popular range of wines?
How do you mean the most popular range?
Well, what's your biggest seller or biggest production?
50% of what we make is sparkling, and the other 50% is still wine, and then that's broken down into, you know, 80% of white sparkling and say 20% rosé, and it's the same with the still wines as well. And we make a little bit of red just to say we can.
Yeah, okay. You don't try and grow Rondo or anything like that?
We do. We grow Rondo and Dornfelder and Pinot Noir. We've got a Dornfelder rosé sparkling in the pipeline at the minute from 2006. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But I think in England, rosé is really the way to bring the best out of red grapes. You get the red grapes naturally get strawberry characters and raspberry characters and cherries and anything else that grows in England. The grapes take on those same characteristics, and I think rosé is the best way to preserve those qualities.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of English rosé. I think I've had some nice reds, particularly if they've had a few years to age and soften out, but definitely rosé. And something that a lot of people don't really talk about, but a couple of years ago I was not a big fan of rosé at all, and it wasn't until I started drinking English rosé I thought, crikey, there can be actually proper rosé wine with nice flavours. And
that's right, and I think in England most people have made their rosés dry because people aren't making very much wine, so most of them are made dry, and I think that in other parts of the world now they've started to realise that make rosé as a priority rather than draining off reds, and to improve the reds they'll have a rosé to, you know, just need something to do with that, with the juice that they drain off. But in England it's made as a priority, and I think other parts of the world now are making rosé as a priority and making dry rosé, and I think customers are starting to enjoy that taste.
One of the things I want to touch on a wee bit is about your Bacchus. Quite like your Bacchus, particularly the 06, which is still available, which is quite good. How was it, a big year or?
06 was a massive year. In England we have, well, I'd say massive. The crop levels were comparable to other warmer wine growing regions. And so, yeah, it was a big year for England. And you know, we were unsure about how the grapes were when they were coming in. You know, thought that maybe the flavours were stretched. But this is the first time that I've ever really tasted our wines weekly at this point in their life, and we're amazed at how the still wines are aging now.
Yeah, the Bacchus. I had a bottle of it the other week at a tasting, and I thought it tasted pretty good at the tasting. Took it home, and it's been about 4 days in the fridge, just 3/4 of a bottle under vacuum. So, yeah. And normally that, if a wine's not holding up age-wise, it'll start to fall to bits pretty quick. And it held up really, really well over that period. And when I was drinking it a couple of nights ago, really nice, you know. It softened out. Some of the acidity wasn't quite as severe, and I thought it was a lot fatter and fuller. And I was drinking it against a Sauvignon Blanc, a New Zealand Sauvignon by Astrolabe, which Simon Waghorn, which we've had on the show.
Yep.
And it was holding up really well against his wines as well. And his... some of the top savvies out in New
Zealand. Yeah, very good. We're just amazed, really, at how they're turning out. I think with English wines, white wines, you get a slight honeyed character coming into the wines as they age. And I think after a year, it makes the wine a little bit fatter. I think after about 5 years, everyone's wines will converge into, you know, a nice honeyed sort of...
Oxidised. But
I think, you know, after 2 or 3 years, you get that really nice light honeyed thing. And I think you're right, it just makes it a little bit fatter.
In fact, I think it's probably tasting better now than when it was first released.
Definitely.
Do you think you'd ever consider holding some back for later release, perhaps?
It's a tough one. I think that, you know, part of drinking wine is the journey. And I think that, a lot of people buy... a few bottles of wine, and they'll try one after they buy it, and then they'll keep trying it, and it's all part of the journey. And I think that by holding it back, you might be restricting that kind of thing. And
doesn't help your cash flow either.
Doesn't help your cash flow, but also the wines are very nice when they're first bottled. I think in England, you know, there's a sort of a style emerging of very light flavoured wines. And I think that people that are aromatic, and I think that consumers now are starting to really like that, and it goes particularly well with English summer's afternoons or seafood, which you get a lot of in England.
Yeah, for sure. Fizz is obviously still a big thing with England. It's what's being planted mostly in the ground. Are you guys doing any more planting or?
Probably a little bit more Pinot Noir. For us, Pinot Noir is a great, fantastic variety to use for pink sparkling, because you, whatever ripeness it is, you get a nice strawberry character. You don't get any greenness. But for the white sparkling, yeah, we still think really that Sauval is the main one.
Sauval Blanc.
Yeah, it's the problem with, I think, with Chardonnay and Pinot Meunier, it's harder to ripen, and the sparkling wines need a lot more aging, and you get more of a oxidised character. I think using Sauval, you get those English sort of hedgerow characters, and it means that we can make a sparkling wine that's individual to England that isn't possible in other places, which I think is important, because the mistake people make is trying to emulate other countries.
Sure.
You'll just be a paler imitation, and other countries can't emulate us, and that's what's important.
Yeah. Yeah, I must admit, you're one of the few people I know that do produce a Sauvignon Blanc in a fizz, and it tastes all right. I've had it a few times now. Mm. We've gotten through a bit of it. But you don't really advertise that it's Sauvignon Blanc on the bottle. It took me a while to work out what it was.
No, yeah, we have... the problem with the word Sauvignon Blanc, it's very like Sauvignon Blanc, and I think consumers can be a bit confused with that. There aren't many varieties that grow well in England, apart from maybe the Champagne ones and Bacchus, that have really good names. So I think, yeah, we're probably... So it's for customers, really, having our name on the bottle is what counts, and people knowing that we make that wine from that blend.
I understand you've taken over from Bob Lindo recently as the manager now, is that right, or just the winemaking duties?
Well,
because he seems to be, every time I talk to him, he's like, "Oh, talk to Sam." You know.
Yeah. Well, I think in winemaking duties, yeah, it's more me that does a lot of the stuff. But in terms of the whole business, I think it's both sort of completely equal. I think that my dad probably feels the same as me, that he never wants to retire. It's just so interesting, everything. And the biggest problem people have with small businesses is they wish there was more people like them. Well, my dad got that. So it's, so yeah, we have a great time working with each other.
What's coming up in the future for you guys?
In the future, well, it's there's been a big, you know, there's been a lot of planting in England, so it'll be really interesting to see how people's wines develop. For us, we sort of really are trying to aim to stay at the top in terms of quality. I don't know if we want to go much larger in production, because it will mean that it will probably take us further away from the enjoyable parts of the job. So we really like the winemaking, and we really like meeting our customers and doing tours and working in the vineyard. And I think if we go bigger, then we'll start to be stuck in an office pulling levers. So for us, I really like the fact that we're at the beginning of our history at the minute. So, you know, we're creating what people were doing, say, in Champagne 300 years ago. We're doing this for England now. So, we're just trying to sort of make it really good for people in 100 years' time.
Just a wee bit out of you guys, how many acres or hectares do you guys have?
We've got 16 acres of vines at Camel Valley, about 20,000 vines, and then probably another double that in contract growers across the south of England. Crops can be anywhere between nothing. We haven't had a nothing yet to maybe 200 tons a year for harvest. So last year was a much lower year. We didn't get any Saval, a very small amount.
So what happened? It was frost, or was it?
It rains.
Yeah.
For months during flowering. And Saval's one of those varieties that when it does crop, it crops big.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't crop, there's nothing.
Okay.
Something like Bacchus, you'll always get a similar amount every year. Saval's just a
bit of a risky.
All or nothing. Well, overall, it works out better than everything else. But you just have to put up with those, the odd.
Yeah.
I reckon 1 year in five when it's, you'll be pulling your hair out.
Do you make a Saval Blanc just a white wine?
No. So, it depends.
Because I've had Savals before, but not.
Well, when we're making a press cut, we'll make the press cut with Saval, and in some years, like 05, it was much better to keep it out of the sparkling. We had a still wine, and then in other years, like 06 and 07, we just put it all in because the acidity was right. So it's really, that's what I was saying earlier about making the two different wines, is that if it's a good year for one, you can put more grapes to one, and if it's a good year for the other, then you just put more to the other.
And why are you called Camel Valley?
We're in the Camel Valley, so the river Camel runs across the front of the vineyard of the estate, and it's called the River Camel because Cam is Cornish for river, and it used to be called the Cam Allen, and then it's shortened to Camel, and it's all English. Things happen. It put
so there's nothing about humps or anything like that.
No, nothing about that. So I think it's a good name.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Okay, then Sam, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Brilliant. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Sam. Sam does have some great wines, and I thought it was interesting what he was saying about Saval Blanc being a unique grape to English sparkling wines. I don't remember having a sparkling Saval Blanc from anywhere else in the world, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Germans have not produced the odd bottle here and there. The other thing Sam was talking about, which I was quite interested on, was talking about acidity and the softer, juicier acidities that come possibly from the soils. He seems to think that maybe the chalk gives a harder, more angular acidity. Not too sure about that, but I'll definitely be keeping an eye out for it. And if you've got an opinion on that, it'd be great to hear from you. You can send me an email on chris.scott@3050.co.uk. I also had a nice email from an Amy Christine in LA who listens to the show. She wanted to know if we were going to cover anything to do with quality assurance or quality control with the supermarkets. I think that's a pretty good idea. I've got a lot of my interviews recorded for the next wee while, so I won't be looking at this probably until the new year, but I think I will have a look at that. That sounds like a pretty interesting idea. How do they guarantee quality? I've been talking to the odd person about how you keep wines from not cooking when they're travelling internationally from Australia, say, to the UK, in those big container ships. So it'd be quite interesting to see what they have to say about that. That pretty much ends the show this week. Just one last wee quote to have. This week's quote is from a famous American philosopher, and he reckons alcohol, the cause and cure of all of life's problems, by Homer Simpson. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.